having a team is good, but also having a good vendor team that can you partner up and scale up together with you, that's going to be pretty key. You can have not only just operational-wise, because you understand that this is a scalable business. You need to think about scalability.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to another Multifamily Monday episode. I'm your host, Sean Winslow, and this is the Multifamily Money Podcast. What is going on, everybody? You know the drill. Every Monday, we're coming at you with all things multifamily real estate investing, sharing tips, tricks, and strategies on what this business is, how to do it right, and learning from people that are in the business and just one of those individuals. We have a guest on today. Before I get into that, a little housekeeping, as always. I don't charge anything for the show. Don't really do any advertising on this show. The only way we can get in front of more people is for you to share it with those that you think can get value from the show and also leave a rating and review. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, give it a like and subscribe on YouTube. That's how we get in front of more ears and eyes. So I appreciate that. And so today's guest, my friend Hendra, came on to lay down some facts about multifamily real estate investing. He both syndicates and does JVs outside of the state he lives in. So for those that live in a market where you think, oh, it's too expensive to buy, I can't get anything to cash flow, yeah, I just don't want to waste my time. This is the episode to listen to because he's in that market. He's in the San Francisco Bay Area market where crazy expensive, often is on the top of the chart for most expensive real estate markets. So what did he do? He went outside of his market. He invested in other states. And we talk about what that's like, because obviously real estate is not a passive thing, right? So you manage the property. And we talked about having a team in the market that you're not in, right? You're not living there, but you're investing there. So you need a team you can trust to manage and take care of your assets. So we talk a lot about that, which was a great conversation, and just kind of industry itself and where we think it's going. So this is a great episode. So let's just get into it and welcome Hendra to the show. Hey, Hendra, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sean.
Thank you for coming on. I know you're a busy guy. Let's just get into it. Everyone loves a good origin story. So if you wouldn't mind sharing who you are, what you've done, and how you got into multifamily real estate.
Yeah. So a little bit background of myself. I'm a technology consultant and still am. Back in .com, I joined the .com company and then become a .buzz and then start getting on the hook like, hey, what other side hustle we can do? Start looking into reading books. Obviously, one thing that everybody been hearing is like Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Kiyosaki is the one that opened up my eyes about a possibility. Start getting into real estate back then and then are able as a accumulating about 8 to 10 single family home portfolio, but find that it's just very hard to scale it in terms of like portfolio and getting up the rat race. But eventually I'm at a juncture that time that I travel a lot. I work for Fortune 25 companies and then travel as a consultant, getting tired of working for somebody else, end up like, I'm going to start looking into a business. And then, but every time I turn around, I always stumble into real estate. And that's where the aha moment is start looking at like, one multifamily. And it started making sense. I brought my wife on the journey together. That's how we got in it together. I mean, my wife was working as operating a restaurant with her friend, a golf course, triple the annual revenue, crushing it. But things like with our lifestyles, a family, we got a 10-year-old son back then. I travel Monday to Thursday. And then when she operates a restaurant, she does a lot of catering and banquet event that take place on a weekend. And the quality of life is not there. I mean, the money is great, but at the end of the day, it's not just about how much you make, but it's also the work-life balance that we find it is missing in raising up a family. And I told my wife, like, let's get into a business venture. And then we stumbled across the multifamily, and that's how we got started. She's jumping in on a full-time basis right now and managing all the assets that we own, a property that we acquired. And that's how where we are today with the multifamily.
That's a great story. And to your point of like the work-life balance, I hear that so often. It was the case for myself too, is when I made a career change, it wasn't like, what am I going to do next for work that's going to give me the most money? But it was more of like, what type of life do I want? What can I create around that for a career? I started looking at other people in both friends, family members, acquaintances, people that I just gone by in the past, and they all had one thing in common. So the ones that had the flexible schedule and were doing well for themselves monetarily, all in real estate. For me, that's when the light bulb went off and I dug in.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about what you're doing now. And what always surprises me is you're balancing two things, right? You still have your career outside of multifamily. So what does that look like? Probably have a team. I'd love to hear that. How do you kind of balance that?
Yeah, I think one thing I really enjoy about multifamily is purely a team sport. When you're looking to single family, let's say you and I are aiming for the same asset, the same single family home, either going to you win or I win. But in some of the multifamily, obviously, it's a team sport. All my properties are out of states. Since the beginning of my journey of investing in real estate, though, we're never going to be able to get a cash flow out of California market. This is where I am. So now with the multifamily, obviously providing to be greater challenge, given that I don't know the market, I don't know the area, but having a team and having a partners out of state, that becoming a really, really crucial. But obviously, it really depends on how you're going to complement each other and grow together as a team. So having a team, obviously, that's going to be pretty key. And then even then, sometimes people forget that maybe you're competing for that same asset, but there's still a way that you feel like there's some gap and some value that you can bring and offer as your skill set, experience to the team that can augment the stabilization of the project. You can team up, ending up a team up, even though originally, initially, you're competing against each other, but eventually you can still work together if that's something, the relationship that you built. It's not going to happen all the time, but that's also on the table. If everybody think that this is it, I'm losing the deal, then the end of the world, the end of the deal, I'm done. That's not really true, because you can still partner up and taking it down together, the deals as a team.
Yeah, I agree with you. I love that part of what we do that is a team sport. No one person is great at everything, right? So it's great to combine skill sets. My partner within my business, he kind of fills in the gaps where I'm not so great, and vice versa, right? And so we really work well together. And then on top of that, when we partner with other groups, it's the same thing.
Yep.
And I think that's the way you got to look at it. And that's what will really help you scale fast. And talking about scaling, so let's talk about it. Where was your first deal? How'd you find it? How'd you take it down? And then kind of how has it progressed after that of more deals you've added on?
Yeah. So my first deal is actually, it's in Dallas, Fort Worth. We are co-GPing for that one. It's 300 units, 348 units to be precise, in Dallas, Fort Worth. Met the partner through a networking. I'm part of the mastermind and they're helping out. And I just congratulate my fellow mastermind member. And I asked, like, is there anything I can do to help? And then again, like when you're offering yourself, make yourself able to help, the door going to be open, because a lot of people are thinking like, just want to find a deal. That, and that's like, a matter of fact, I do. Can you really help with the all the CapEx fund that we're helping it and things like that? And that's like, sure, you know, let me see what I can do. And that's how it got started. And then obviously that's, we're being invited to be a co-GP on that deals together. A deal has come really stabilized right now. We are actually enjoying a good cash flow coming in after 3 years. So 3 years ago, Dallas market is still favorable. And right now it's a little bit tight to my liking. And I know some people are pretty bullish still on DFW market. So we got a little bit of hiccup, obviously, but right now property stabilized pretty good. One of the issue, because of the older boiler, and obviously when you have like one building, one boiler, it's basically just killing our expenses, right? So that's the reason why you have to go through the HVAC replacement and then changing some windows to keep it a little more energy efficient. And after that, we just refinance a little bit, return some of the capital, and then been stabilizing right now.
That's great. And that goes to the point of teaming up in partnerships, is that you can help fill these gaps that are actually really important.
Absolutely.
And most people might not look at it that way, but it is. There's so much to do on these big deals that not one person or group can necessarily do it themselves, at least not well. That's great. So then what happened next in terms of growing your, scaling your business?
Yeah. So that been on the syndication side, but eventually we started shifting, primarily focused on the JV. A lot of people think like, hey, number of doors is pretty important. Don't get me wrong, sounds really great. But for us personally, me and my wife, our portfolio, we're trying to balance out our portfolio every now and then. So just some of the syndication and some of the JV. So obviously the JV is something that we're going to buy and hold a little bit longer. rather than 5 to 7 year hold, then we sell it, which is great. But the other portion of our portfolio for multifamily, we're trying to hold it a little bit longer. Then the play is a little bit different. Then it's a smaller unit too. We're talking about 40 to 50 units apartment that we're aiming for. So the play, that's been the focus the last 18 to 24 months for us, just shifting into joint venture property.
Have you noticed, I've heard this, and I don't know if it's the truth or not, but some people say that smaller multis, like smaller than that, there's a lot of competition because it's a lot of people get into it. And then the bigger ones, there's like big, there's less competition because fewer players, and the 100 to probably 200, it's really competitive. And then some say the, like, I don't know, 80 or 60 to 20, 20 to 60, it's a little less competitive because there's, again, the smaller people, it's too big for them. And then the guys that go around for the big stuff, it's too small for them. Is that the case, or is it still just as competitive?
I guess it really depends market to market specific, right? For example, like, you know, in the city of San Francisco or Bay Area, or Northern California, where I am, if you're aiming for 60 plus units, then the deal, unless you're a private equity or hedge fund, the deal is not going to pencil out.
Yeah.
It's a massive deal. But if you're looking for a value at syndication, I got a couple of friends is actually doing it in days in and out in the Bay Area or LA market, like in the 20 to 30 range. So 20 to 30 doors range, right? Because they got a different model. They got a different way to do a value at the buyout tenant and so forth, right? That thing working out. They know how to underwrite it. So I guess it really depends market to market specifically. It's not going to be all across the nation though. I know that in the area that I am right now, 40 units tend to be there's some competition still, but it's not going to be heavily when people like looking for 80 to 100 units. Again, market specific though, I would say.
I've thought about looking at that just because you still can make a killing on that size deal. You know, the same business model, except you generally don't have on-site staff, right? Depending on the deal, obviously different markets, right? So how's that been for you? Like you mentioned, you're investing out of state. Do you have like a boots on the ground partner, or how are you running that?
You brought up a very good point, because now I think that's becoming a catch-22, right? Every time you get into a new market, because like, oh yeah, that's Bay Area, California, way too expensive. I'm going to get out of states. And then they forget when you go out of states, like who's going to be your team that you partner up? I was fortunate enough when we entering to the market that where I am in Midwest, we found a good property manager that want to grow together with us. So we are actually the first multifamily customer for them. The owner is actually coming from self-storage operation in the past. He's starting up his own property management, and they're primarily catered toward like industrial and as well as offices. So we are actually the first multifamily customer for them. And we took our chance, and then he took also a chance from us. And then it worked out really well. This is chemistry still there. And then we like the way their thought process, the way they approach things, especially for minimizing the expenses and making suggesting any improvement and so forth. It's like thinking like as an owner. So that's the reason we like it. And from that kind of partnership, we grow. And obviously, when we expand, we're trying to expand in the market itself. And then within 2-3 hours, when the moment that 12 months ago, I expressed the interest to expand to 3 hours drive radius. And we took our chances like, hey, maybe we can expand our market that way too. So to answer your question, yeah, having a team, it's good, but also having a good vendor team that can you partner up and scale up together with you, that's going to be pretty key. Because that way, then you can have not only just operational wise, that only started with 20 units become bigger, because you understand that this is a scalable business. You need to think about scalability. It's not just going to taking like 28 and I'm done, because they're going to be more thing like that too. I mean, our sweet spot originally going to be in the 40s, but in some market that we have our presence, then we can scale down a little bit, then adding it to the scalability of the overall ownership within that market. We took down 20 units recently because we already have like 68 units in the area. So we know that the scalability is there to help out rather than taking a small scale up there.
I've actually started to do the same thing in markets where we have good scale already. I've actually started to look at smaller stuff that I normally wouldn't look at, but it's because we already have the scale there. So it just makes sense. Whereas if I was entering a new market, I wouldn't look at it.
Yeah. That gives you a competitive advantage, right? Because like, that's too small. I don't want it. But hey, I already got like 80 units now. It makes sense now. That way then I can share the staff
exactly
rather than incurring more. Yeah.
And that's really like that's how you can exponentially scale. Like you can still scale throughout different markets and people do it all the time, but you can really scale fast when you're in a few markets that you just grow in there, because sharing those resources.
Absolutely.
Not only just that, but you're building relationships within the market. You really get to know that market like the back of your hand, make decisions with a level of comfort that you probably wouldn't be able to in markets that you don't know well. That just helps when you have that speed, right? And you know what rents you can get.
Yep.
It makes a huge difference.
Yeah. And then having a good partnership also helps. I mean, we recently last year, we got it from our network, like they're a property owner. They want to sell 24 units. And it came across to my wife, and then my wife looking into it. It's like, looks pretty good. Bring it over to our property manager, and our property manager obviously came with feedback, like it's good property, it's very well maintained. However, though, that's in the rental alley. So pretty much like you might be competing against many other property that's running area though. So I would not suggest you to take that property. So that kind of good relationship, because you have a good chemistry and then you also want to grow together, not just like, hey, I'll manage it, you know, whether you make money or not, that's a secondary for me, but because you have the same interests that really help you to scale up also really fast.
Yeah, I agree with that. To me, that's what it's about too. It just makes it, scaling that way just makes it easier for everyone. It makes it obviously for you, but also for your team members too. And I've done it before where you have to keep building new teams and it's just not efficient or effective of anyone's time, really. It takes so much time and trust to do that. I feel once you find a good team, to just go all in with that team to the extent you can. I don't know if you have any more thoughts on that, or kind of where you're looking to progress now. Is it to focus in those markets you're already in, or is it to expand a little outside of them?
So right now we are going to be focusing on the market that we are in. I mean, we got a team established. I got involved in multiple deals, but in terms of the partnership though, I'm a little bit picky on the partnership. The reason is a lot of people are looking, dying and hunger for deals, which is, I don't blame them, right? That's the reason why you want to get into multifamily and they cannot find anything. So any deal sounds pretty good. They jump on it. As long as they pencil out, they'll jump on it. But people forget that you're going to be married to that partnership for quite some time. It's not just like 1 year or 2 year, you're done. And then especially if you're talking about generational wealth property that could be lifetime, then you want to make sure that you have the alignment on the value and the goal also.
I see that too, where it kind of almost feels like desperation to some extent, right? Not from everybody, but for some people where it's eager to get into a deal, which I do get, or it's they're eager to pull you into their deal. And it's like, hey man, you just sent me a LinkedIn message. That doesn't mean I'm ready to go. We got to date first before we get married here. To me, that's what it is. It's a marriage. Once you're on a GP team, that's a marriage for probably 5 years. And to your point, you got to be aligned in many ways, obviously business sense, business plan wise, but also to me, it's also morals too. Like you're aligned in that sense too with those individuals. And you can't develop that from one LinkedIn correspondence or not even really one Zoom call either. I think it takes some time.
One thing that you can test, like, for example, like I typically put in a rule, like, hey, I need to get back to people within 24 hours. The person that reached out to you and then you respond back and you didn't hear back for after many days, then probably it's like, that's not a good sign to begin with to partner up.
That's true. And that's a great way to assess it too. Is how they do the little things, how anyone does the little things is kind of most likely how you're going to do anything, right? So important. So you're continuing to do a combination of syndication and JV going forward. I kind of like that approach. I've done that to a little bit to an extent too, like with my own personal portfolio. I think it's smart.
Yeah, I think depending on the market cycle right now, but the last few acquisitions I've done happen to be a JV. We're open for syndication, but right now, whatever pencil out right now, given that the market condition and rate condition too.
Talking about market cycles, I know you don't have a crystal ball, but two things. Like, where do you feel things are kind of headed? Obviously, there's a lot up in the air with that. And then two, how are you positioning yourself? Are there any kind of like guardrails you're putting up or criteria to follow?
Yeah, I think market cycle wise, getting a capital is becoming a little bit challenging, right? Or maybe you, even though you have a good relationship with the community bank or credit union, it's easier. However, doesn't really change the fact that rate has gone up a lot compared to like 2-3 years ago. So I think one thing that it's going to become tighter and tighter in terms of the underwriting, we just need to be more creative and then more conservative in terms of like expenses, like how can we tighten up the expenses even more? That's how we approach things. And then also in terms of like rent bump. I mean, in the past, we've been underwriting it with the rent bump 5-7%, and some people are even more go great aggressive, like about 10-15%, especially after the pandemic hits. Like, oh yeah, nobody want to move, oh, we just bump it up, thing like that. It works out really well. I think we are in the different cycle right now that potentially also that people forget that cap rate can also be expand at this market right now with the given the inflation thing like that. People think like, oh yeah, inflation is 7-8% and then drop a little bit to 6.5%, I think last time I checked. But again, don't anticipate that rent growth gonna be go in parallel with that one too. So be conservative, be human too as a property owner, knowing that it's more expensive to getting a new tenant rather than retain one. But another thing that you can do, you can try to tighten up the expenses instead of going crazy with all the value add and upgrade, thing like that. Trying to make it, what is the goal to begin with when you acquire a property? For us, you just want to create safe and clean and still affordable for the market over there. So meaning like we're going to go with the average rent in the market without going overboard, thing like that. So how can we do that? We're trying to tighten up the expenses. Anything that we know that's going to be providing any much value in return, then we're trying to not do it. But obviously, we're trying to clean it up. The property is still going to be desirable for our resident, our customer in this case, when we remain with the property. And then to get a rent bump a little bit because we give them something in return.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. The human aspect too is very important. Just because, you know, they're your customer, it's a place where they're living, you need to take care of them. And to your point, everything's getting more expensive. And sometimes you just got to, well, also that your point of turnover, that's usually kill a deal, right? If you have a lot of turnover. So it is cheaper just to keep them there. Maybe not even raise it at all or raise it minimal versus, you know, trying to raise a lot and have to go find someone else. So I'm glad you brought that up because that's not always brought up. And it's just the fact, like I've been talking about this, there's a point where you just can't raise it, right? Like your model might tell you you can, but there's just a point where people just can't afford that anymore. And yeah, they might sign a lease with you, but then your collections are going to dip. So I think you got to be smart about that. Yeah. And yeah, right now,
absolutely,
we're not really underwriting rent growth, or at least very, very, very minimal. And it's usually been negated by expense growth. So, and I think that's what we're doing right now. Just I feel like there's an inflection point. Obviously, we're looking for like a loss to lease play. So there is that aspect. But from a pure organic rent growth, we're not really underwriting. I think that is smart. But yeah, who knows what's going to happen, right? And I think there's a lagging effect to this all too. Like to your point, inflation has receded, but we don't really know what that's going to entail for the industry. I think it's just a lagging effect.
Correct.
To see that. All right, Andrew, before I ask you the final question, where can the listeners find you?
They can reach out to me through social media. My handle at the Instagram is Indra T, Facebook Indra Tambunan, or they can reach out to our website, IdeaBox Capital. IdeaBoxCapital.com. And I'm going to give myself a number if somebody want to text me, and then feel free to reach out if you're going to get any questions or anything I can help them with. 510-270-2920.
I would reach out if you guys have questions for sure. All right. You ready for the lightning round here?
Yep.
All right. Let's do it.
All right. Let's do it, John.
All right. First one. Why multifamily real estate as an investment vehicle? Because there's obviously a lot of investment vehicles out there. And even just within the real estate asset class itself, there's a lot of different asset classes. So why multifamily? What type of life has it provided you so far? And what type of life do you see it providing in the future?
One thing that I like about multifamily is the economy of scales. The way I see it, in the past, I consider myself investing in single family home. But right now, I consider myself as a real estate entrepreneur because I can see it just more than just like buying a property, but what can I do with this property? How can I make it really, really solving the housing crisis that our nation is facing right now through multifamily, through real estate apartment, right? That's the way I see it. And again, I'm serving a customer, not just a tenant or a renter in this case, which is the single family home that's pretty common. But here I'm serving a customer, a resident in my apartment, and by still making it profitable, adjusting between the income and expenses, manageable expenses in this case. So economy of scales is one thing that intrigued me about multifamily to begin with.
Love it for that too. They're like their own businesses, right? Each property is like its own business, and you can just keep scaling that. Can you use the same system and processes that you've already created? Awesome. And so what type of lifestyle does this afford you, or what type of lifestyle you would afford you one day?
So obviously the cash flow is rewarding, but I think one thing that really another part of the rewarding for me. I'm coming like with, if you ask my wife, she probably going to tell you like, you know, I have so many crazy ideas. And given that this is, I created a business, there are so many ways that crazy ideas, or at least some ideas that I can implement. It's just, for me, it's like becoming like, I wouldn't call it like a incubation lab, but I just think about like, oh, how about doing this? How about doing that? What can we do to minimize the expenses? How can we maximize the revenue and so forth? So for me, that is also as rewarding as the passive income, the equity also is generated. That's really given a greater, I would say, great satisfaction and rewarding for me in that sense.
I love it. All right. Next question. What is a common mistake you see people make in this business, or even there's a mistake you've made that you want to share?
I would say we dare not begin multifamily with the end in mind. What I mean is like when you're starting it, sometimes you just like, I need to go into multifamily. I need to buy a property. I need to acquire a property. That's great. But what are you going to do with it? I mean, it's totally different than you're going to play a syndicator, or you're just going to be investing as an LP, or you just want to buy it as a partnership, it's JV. But you got to know what is your end goal for you. I mean, Sean, we have a conversation here right now, and then our goal, even though we are in the same business together, our angle is totally different though. Some people are having a goal like, hey, I want to get like $1 million cash. Why? So I can go somewhere overseas and I'm going to be retired happy. But some people's like, nope, I don't really care about that one. I'm just preparing for generational wealth. I'm happy with the cash flow that I'm getting right now, but I'm trying to build equity, or eventually that's going to be for my grandkids' generation and so forth. So having the end in mind, that really helps you to navigate the journey you're going to take. The thing about multifamily or real estate as a tools, the way you navigate it and the way you approach it are going to be different when you have an end in mind, end game in mind.
That's so true. And I think that's smart, Andrew, because anything in life, you should know where you're headed before you start, right? I love that.
Absolutely.
All right. Number three, what is a resource that you would tell someone maybe who's new getting into this, whether they're active or passive, something they should check out?
Well, there are quite a few books. I mean, for me, gaining knowledge for getting educated, right, is pretty crucial. A lot of people are wanting to jump into coaching or a mastermind, which is fine. But start with a book. I'm going to give you a book. Number one, Wheelbarrow Profits. That's the book that got me started. It's written by Jake Stanziano and Gino Barbaro. That's a good book. It's available. It's like, I think like $19 in Amazon. Read it. See if you like that kind of business model. And then if you like it, then start looking for into a mentorship and a coaching, right? Because before you invest in multifamily, invest in yourself first. And then from that, even invest in mastermind. Once you're fully educated, be out there, connected with people, and try to see what kind of value that you can add and augment the team. And that's how you're going to get a deal flow coming in. I'm in a place in California that I know I will never going to get a deal over here to begin with, but I'm going to be positioning myself a little bit differently because now I have my education. I got a friend and a family interested that I can team up together and partner up with people that have deals. That's how the deal flow can start coming in the moment you put yourself out there. So I would say that get educated, get connected with people, and that's how you get started in this business.
All right. Last question. So if you had a time machine, you could go back, speak to your younger self, and give yourself one piece of financial advice, because after all, this is also a personal finance show. What would that one piece of financial advice be?
Well, I would say that just like what I just said, you know, get educated, get in the, and then I'm probably going to add like getting into multifamily a lot sooner than what I know today. So that's one thing. And then secondly, also get connected with people. Again, when I started, if I look back and reflect, many times that I just never get myself educated to begin with. My method, I was joking with my wife, like when I started into single family back then, the method I used is just like basically acquire, invest, and pray, because I never really understand about the fundamental data of what the economy of the local market, population growth, and so forth, right? Knowing what I know today, I would approach things differently. And also in getting to know people, getting to learn from each other. I think a lot of time that people forget that people are readily available. Not all of them, but most of the time, people are readily available to help you out and share their knowledge with you for free. And, you know, as long as you know how to approach them, as long as you know that you offer something that they can help them too. I actually challenged my son. I got a 15-year-old son now. My son is 15 years old. Last year, I took him to boot camp for multifamily. And to my surprise, I said, he want to get involved now. And then starting, but again, teenager being teenagers, sometimes he's just like, yes, I'm eager. And then next day, yeah, I don't know. But at least showing some interest, like, hey, I want to learn more about real estate. I want to learn more about multifamily, which is a great thing. I purposely asked him when I took him to the boot camp, I purposely tell him, like, you're coming in on my dime, but I want you to have a homework. I want you to go to all my friends and ask them like exactly the same thing you asked me earlier. If you can give yourself, what would be the advice you give to yourself at my age if you can turn back your time? He got all the golden advice from people like, hey, listen to your parents, find your passion, get educated and so forth. And he learned it from somebody else, not his parent. Something he doesn't want to listen to.
Right. Yeah. They got to hear it from someone else, right? Even if you're saying the same thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm going to remember that for one day. That's amazing. Well, Hendra, I really appreciate you sharing that, but also this whole show. So thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me, Sean.
And listeners, as you know, as I always say, easy doesn't pay well and instant gratification is self-destructive. So not only get out there and work hard for your money, but have your money work hard for you. So we can all create the lives of our dreams and make this world a better place. All right, everybody, catch you on the next one.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is an investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review and of course, share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.